Today is July 15th, 2015, and this is episode number 315 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a sweet, sweet Spanish doll. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, and we really, really, really would like to hear from you. It's at acm@macobserver.com.
Yeah. I want to hear from you, and my sweet, sweet Spanish doll wants to hear from you, too.
It's a great song, man.
It is.
Did you listen to it yet? I sent it to you.
You did, and I was able to get about halfway through before, grown-up priorities, like recording a show.
Oh, right. Right, things like that, right. Yeah, well, it's by Poe, the artist Poe, and I love her. I think she is awesome, and it is a beautiful, beautiful song. Sweet. Actually, it's just called Spanish Doll. So why don't we put a note, a link to iTunes?
It's kind of funny because I was about to say the same thing.
Excellent. Great minds think alike.
Yes, indeed.
Sort of, you know, whatever. So, what are we doing here? This is a show about Apple, right? Technology, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess.
And trains?
And trains. And Spanish dolls.
And Spanish dolls, right. Well, this week, we found out that Facebook is working on a virtual assistant they think they're going to call Funny Penny.
And they also think it's virtual.
Well, the news came from The Information. And it was a very short piece, said something. I mean, it was woefully short on details. And some of those details were contradictory. So they said it was going to be a virtual assistant, that it was going to be built into Messenger, the Messenger app, basically. And it would allow you to ask questions of trains. Going to ask you, allow you to ask questions of quote unquote real people about, like, you know, research related things and shopping crap.
Uh-huh.
So if you're asking real people, it's not virtual. It's more like it's remote.
Yeah, maybe they're confusing virtual and remote.
Yeah. Could be. It seems weird that they would actually bother doing it with real people. So I mean, there was nothing really definitive. There was nothing. What am I trying to say? There was no particular element of this story for me to hang a hat on, other than the fact that Facebook is probably actually working on some kind of assistant that they are calling Money Penny. What it actually is going to be is the part that was kind of confusing.
Well, the fact that a social network wants to give us what I would call a virtual assistant, mm-hmm. I do find to be kind of interesting, because that so far has not been the purview of social networks.
Well, Facebook has always, I said in my piece about this, that, you know, Facebook has long had these delusions of being some sort of bona fide platform. And, you know, they had their stupid phone that no one wanted. They've had their app store that no one uses. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of things that Facebook does right from the standpoint of attracting users. But they always have these, you know, these visions of being more than they are, and more importantly, more than I think that they can actually be.
Well, they probably get some of those notions from Google, because Google has successfully become more than it was.
Yeah, it's true. And Facebook certainly has the money to become, to develop more technical, I don't know, man, whatever. I honestly, I don't think Money Penny is going to be a success and I don't really think that Facebook is the company to do it, but I don't really care as long as we have more development dollars put in this particular area. And this was sort of the central premise of my piece on this. I want my software agents. And we don't have software agents yet. And we've been told that software agents were coming for decades.
Yes, actually, we have been told that.
And, you know, software agents are supposed to, like, you know, gather, gather news and other, you know, other sources of information that we might like. They're supposed to take care of our bills. They're supposed to watch stuff for us. They're supposed to intelligently filter our email. Supposed to be able to make a lot of simple decisions for us so that we don't have to, but do so in a way that's tailored to us and not tailored to, and not just dumb algorithm-based stuff. And we've been told this is going to be coming for a long time, and the quip I made was that, you know, as far as I can tell, our software agents are off riding hoverboards and jetpacks.
Which I thought was a very clever line.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. But we certainly don't have them.
No, we don't. You know, I've been pining for the Knowledge Navigator ever since that video was introduced in, what was that, late 80s, early 90s?
That would have been 90, I think, 89 or 90.
Yeah. And, I mean, I saw that and I was like, yes, I want this. Give me the Knowledge Navigator. And we still aren't there. But, you know, we're getting closer. Like, you know, Siri does a little bit for us, but it's not Knowledge Navigator.
No, I mean, so Siri, Cortana, and then Google Now, which I think Google Now is the best of the bunch, are the closest that we've come to the promise of software agents.
Yes.
But they're still not, I mean, like, you know, Siri is completely reactive. It's not, of course, you know, Apple is introducing proactive in iOS 9.
Which gets us another small step closer to our dream of true software agents.
Right. And it takes iOS a large step closer to Google Now, but I think Google Now is still going to be in the lead in terms of functionality and intrusiveness.
Well, Google has the leg up in that field because
they've been peeing on us for so long.
Because they have. Yeah, Google isn't as worried about respecting our privacy as Apple is.
Well, it's true. Actually, Google's entire business model is predicated on not respecting our privacy in any way whatsoever. And, you know, Google Now is the best thank you that we get back for that intrusiveness. And to remind our listeners, proactive in iOS 9 will be putting information in front of us that it thinks that we want. Again, similar to what Google Now does.
Right. You know, when it's truly proactive, that's when I'm going to start getting really excited. I mean, I like the idea of our devices being able to anticipate that we're going to be leaving the office soon. So they figure out what the traffic is going to be like before we leave. Okay, that's great. Yep,
very handy. Very good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And being able to give us proactive information about upcoming flights that we have. You know, that's great too.
Yep. Exactly. There's lots of things that are coming in proactive, and most of those things have been around in Google Now. And that does, I mean, like I said, this is the closest we've gotten to software agents. Cortana, actually, proactive is going to keep Apple ahead of Cortana. But Microsoft's Cortana does also do a few reactive things really, really well. But even still, these are far, far away from true software agents. And while I don't expect Facebook to really be able to compete in this area, to go toe-to-toe with Apple and Microsoft and Google on a technology, artificial learning side of things. I don't expect Money Penny to be a thing, but the fact that Facebook is doing it is great because it means more R&D dollars put on this into this field.
Yes, and I like that idea. That's the positive. Hopefully, that comes out of Money Penny.
Right, and hopefully other companies will be jumping on this. Like, you know, Amazon, to me, is much more likely to be able to develop something that can go head to head with Apple and Google and that. And that may be surprising for some people to hear, but Amazon has been doing a lot on the technology side, and their cloud services are highly respected, and they have an enormous amount of computing power at their disposal. And of course, IBM, I think, could do something really special in this area too. And the more companies we have competing on this front, the better for us, the consumer, because I want my software agents.
Sure. Yeah, I think Amazon is in a good position. They need to work on making whatever algorithms they're using today more intelligent. And then that could be a really cool thing. I mean, like right now, actually, here's a perfect example. I bought a window air conditioner unit a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since then, Amazon has been sending me emails with deals on window air conditioning units.
Yeah, that's not very smart.
Too late. I already bought it.
Yeah. Yeah, they should send that stuff to you after you've looked for it, but not after you've bought it.
Right.
And that's not very smart.
And if you have a smart thermostat in your place, and it knows that the temperature is routinely far too hot,
mm-hmm.
then if that's linked in with all of your other accounts, then you could proactively get ads for window air conditioner units.
Right.
Which on one hand would be cool, but on the other hand would be kind of scary. Having that manifestation that only proves what's already happening, which is that these companies have crazy amounts of information on us.
Right. Yeah. That's true. It's true. It's true. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. You know, at least with Amazon, it's, I don't know. Even with Google, it's, we've given them that access. I don't know. That's another rabbit hole for another time. I want more development here. We are still, you know, Siri, as good as Siri is at some things, as great as Google Now is at other things, as good as Cortana is at some things, we are so at the beginnings of this idea of having virtual assistants that can truly rock our world. And with the more R&D dollars that are put towards this, the faster we will get there. And as, you know, much of a joke, I think, as Facebook is in some of these areas, welcome to the party and good luck and kick some ass.
Yeah. And make everything better for all of us.
Yes, please. Yes, please. I want that. By the way, you know, speaking of Amazon,
mm-hmm.
you know what you can do?
You can buy stuff.
You can buy stuff.
But when you buy stuff, you can also buy it in a way that benefits us.
It is true. Amazon has an affiliate program, and we are members. And we would like you to shop with them through our affiliate program.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
It would be very, very, very cool. And you can find the link on our homepage. It's on the right-hand side. Down at the bottom below the other ads. And as a matter of fact, you can there's ads right now, I think, there's affiliate links for Amazon, Mac Model, and the Apple Store. And we're guessing that you probably shop at from 1, 2, 3 of those.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah. And if you do shop through them, do it through our affiliate program. If you're curious about them, if you are actually like somehow have never shopped at any of them, check them out and do it through our affiliate program.
Now we're just being an enabler,
it's
but
true.
I think that's okay.
It's true. Well, people buy things.
They do. So they might as well get good deals and give us a little bit of support in the process. That's right. Which is awesome.
It doesn't cost you anything extra.
That's right. It doesn't.
So, you know, it's just they end up giving us a percentage of the sales back in exchange for having something to the customer.
And then we can put that money into making sure that shows like this can happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We sound kind of like NPR, don't we?
A little bit. A little bit. Except for we're not asking for money directly. We're just asking you to buy the things that you already buy to do it through our affiliate programs.
Steve, we're really cool like that.
Yeah, we are cool like that.
Yeah.
We are cool like that. All right. What do we have? We have I don't know. You want to go to Mr. Young?
You know, I was just thinking we should probably talk about him.
Neil Young. I like the guy. I like his music.
Yeah, he's been making incredible music for a really long time.
Since the 60s.
Yes, and he's come up with what he thinks is a superior music listening experience through his Pono music player.
Pono, right? I was calling it Pony earlier, wasn't I?
Oh, yes, you were.
Yeah, that's right, Pono. And the premise of Pono, the promise of Pono, as it were, is the idea that it's a higher quality music, higher quality samples. And we actually, golly, when was that? Was that after CES that we talked a lot about?
Yes,
that?
It was. Yeah.
The reality is that the human ear can't actually hear most of what Pono is delivering.
Yeah, it would be like saying the television that we're about to sell you gives you a better image because it also has infrared light coming out of it.
Right, which...
Which human eye can't see. Which,
yeah, right. It does, in fact, maybe make a... It could conceivably make a better image, but it's irrelevant to us because we can't see it.
Right. So anyhow, Neil Young has this audio player that supposedly gives us audio frequencies to make everything sound better, but we can't hear them, nor can most of the speakers and headphones that we use reproduce those anyhow.
Right, right. But this is something that he's pretty keen on. He's pretty keen on the idea of music being presented as high a quality as possible. He's very against the degradation in quality that has gone hand in hand with digital files online in particular. Which is true. Almost all of the digital files that you're buying, including those from the iTunes store, are compressed from the original.
Yes.
And I would guess that most people can't hear the difference. But
most people can't.
But some people can. And Neil Young claims that he's one of them, and he's really keen on this idea of quality. He's also very keen on the idea of music being presented the way the artist wanted it, as opposed to the way listeners might want to get it.
Yeah, and that's a place where it's kind of tough, because the artists, they do have a way they want to present to us, but we also want to listen in the way we want to listen.
Yeah, I have a lot of empathy for that notion. And I, as a consumer, I actually, there are a lot of albums in my collection that I prefer to listen to start to finish.
Yep. I have several albums in my collection where I feel just the same way.
Certainly I have a playlist. Certainly I like the concept of the, you know, mixed tape and what it's become today. But there are some things that I really do prefer to listen to in the order that they were presented to me by the artist. And so I do. I have a lot of empathy for a lot of what Neil Young says. It's just sometimes I'm so loath to say this because I love Neil Young so much. I've been listening to him for so long. And there's so much of his music that I like and appreciate, and I so appreciate the principled stand he has so often made in life. But he, it's what he said. Was that today?
Yes, today on his Facebook page, he said that he's pulling all of his music from all streaming services. And the reason for doing so is that because the music quality, so the audio quality, is horrible, and the delivery system or the platform itself is horrible. And he said both are the worst that we've had in history, which made me laugh because I remember cassette tapes.
Yeah, and 8-track tape tapes, and did I say tape tapes? I don't want anyone to know that I said that, so I'm going to cut that one out.
Fair enough.
8-track tapes. I can't believe I Kakunka. I can't believe I said that. Nonetheless, he, after tweeting that he was going to do this because streaming represented the worst quality in the history of delivering music, on his Facebook page, he said, and I quote, "I was there. AM radio kicked streaming's ass. Analog cassettes at 8-tracks also kicked streaming's ass and absolutely rocked compared to streaming. Streaming sucks. Streaming is the worst audio in history. If you want it, you got it. It's here to stay. Your choice. Copy my songs if you want to. That's free. Your choice. All my music, my life's work is what I am preserving the way I want it to be. It's already started. My music is being removed from all streaming services. It's not good enough to sell or rent. I'm assuming he is referring to the services, not his
material. Not his music.
Not his music. Right. Make streaming sound good and I will be back." And he said, never say never. Where did that go? That was there. Now it's gone.
I bet he edited it.
Was that on his tweet, maybe? It said, never say never. So make streaming sound good and I will be back, Neil Young. So that's what he said. And the reason why we're talking about it is in part because his assertion that cassettes and 8-tracks were better
and AM radio. AM
radio. Listen, you can go turn on AM radio now. You can go get in your car. I mean, your car probably has an AM radio station, an AM radio, you know, the receiver. It does not sound good. Cassettes never sounded good. People were complaining about cassette quality back when cassettes were the state of the art. Right? 8-tracks, actually, 8-tracks sounded better until, of course, you got to the Kakunka track change. And, you know, I had The Magical Mystery Tour by the Beatles.
Love that album.
Great album. And I had it on 8-track tape. And I Am the Walrus was broken up between track 2 and 4. Well, tracks 3 and 4 and then 5 and 6. So when it got to the, you know when it gets to that, the little that's like not even the right key, but whatever. Right before that, I got a nice kakunka. Actually sounded weird to me when I would listen to it without the kakunka.
Oh, I bet it did because you'd heard it that way for so long.
I listened to that 8-track tape so many times. But anyway, here's my point. 8-track tape sounded better than cassettes, but it was still a miserable experience. And cassettes sounded awful, and AM still sounds awful. Cassettes still sound awful. So I don't know what world Neil Young is coming from where streaming audio is of lower quality than AM radio, cassettes, or 8-tracks. That's weird.
I don't know. Yeah, that's really weird. I was trying to process it for a minute and think, wait, what did I miss that makes what he's saying legit?
I'm wondering if he sampled a streaming service briefly and that it was a negative experience for him.
You know, there are a lot of people that will try something once and then make their lifelong never to change decision about what that is just from that. And and if he had a bad day with the streaming music service, you know, a crappy connection or whatever, I could see where he could think that AM radio or a cassette tape is better, but Other than that, no. I mean, come on a cassette tape, it always hissed.
Cassettes sound awful. You know, on a completely related note, hipsters going on about cassettes being awesome just send me into a blind fury. Cassettes are so awful. We should have sued the music industry out of existence for foisting cassette tapes off on us.
Cassette tapes, I think cassette tapes is the single worst platform for music delivery and music quality that we've ever had.
Yeah,
modern technology.
Followed closely by 8-tracks.
Yes. Just
because of all the compromises you had to make. To do 8-track. And I don't even want to ding AM radio for its place in time. AM radio made rock and roll. And AM radio was what we had. So, I mean,
and a lot of songs were actually mixed to sound good on AM radio.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, that's actually what most of the Beatles music was mixed for. And having their content in stereo was something they went back and did later, where they just took like the drums and put it on one channel and the guitars on the other.
Right.
Yeah. So in some cases, listening to the mono mix for AM will give you a more realistic representation of what the artists wanted.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. In some ways, in some ways. So anyway, yeah. I don't get where he's coming from. I haven't been a supporter of Pono in general. Although I supported the theoretical principle behind it, but you know, it in terms of practical and actual usability, it's ridiculous. My point being that Neil Young has just flown off the deep end if he thinks that streaming is of lower quality than AM 8-tracks or cassettes.
Well, sometimes when people get on a crusade, they will hit a point where they will just simply rewrite their own reality to make whatever it is that they want to believe be the absolute truth.
Right.
And I think that Neil might be doing a little bit of that right now.
Yeah, that's probably the case. I found his Never Say Never. He did not delete it. It was an earlier post. So the post that I read was a posted response to people saying things like, hello, cassettes, hello, AM radio. So in this first post, he said Never Say Never.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So he did not edit his post. It's still there.
Correct.
Yeah. But he's wrong.
He is wrong.
I respect his music, but in this case, he is wrong.
Yes.
And I've been in musicals on stage, so I am qualified to pass that judgment.
Well, you at the very least have listened to your music listener, so you're qualified.
That's true. Yep. I have been in bands. I have different headphones for different things. Like my podcasting headphones mm-hmm. versus my music listening headphones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet I don't consider myself a music snob. I'm just a guy that gets what he's hearing.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I don't know. Mr. Young, by the way, it's always interesting to me when, right-wing politicians try to claim his music. He is like a lefty liberal.
Actually, that is really funny. Well, a lot of the songs that I see the conservative candidates latching onto, mm-hmm. it's pretty clear to me they aren't actually listening to the lyrics.
Yeah, they're listening.
They're catching like one line. Yeah, and they don't get what the context of the song actually is.
Right.
Yeah, it's well. You know, you see kids do that. You know how kids these days they'll pick a song to be their class song when they're graduating from high school, and they do the same thing. They pick a line from a chorus, and they're like, "Oh, there we go, that's it." And if you listen to the rest of the song, it's like, either you kids were having a really crappy year, or you didn't listen to the rest of the music.
It's kind of like people who want to ban The Killing Mockingbird because it's racist.
Yeah.
Or they want to ban, you know, Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer because they're racist stories. Or people who wanted to, people who were suing Ozzy Osbourne over a Suicide Solution, a song about suicide not being a solution.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my favorites from the movie world. It's a Alan Alda movie from, I think, the early 80s. Mm-hmm. The Seduction of Joe Tynan. And I remember parents freaking out and trying to get the studios to pull it from theaters because all they saw was The Seduction.
Oh, right.
And it's actually a movie about a politician who goes in to or onto Capitol Hill with the best of intentions and gets sucked into the political game and gets seduced by the political game. And it's not about sex at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, people.
Yeah. And right now there's a group of people that are like, how do you guys even have those references? And they're checking IMDb and stuff. And go watch The Seduction of Joe Tynan, people. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, fair enough. And there's other people who were cursing us for being lefty pinkos.
Well, you can't please everyone.
It's true. It's true. You can't please everyone. Apple. There's my segue. Apple.
That's a fantastic segue.
Apple. Is Apple spread too thin? What do you think?
Well, it depends on what you mean by spread too thin. If you mean the number of products that they're making, or the product markets that they're going into, those can be different things. So I would say that Apple is spread thinner than they were 5 years ago, but not as thin as they were before Steve Jobs came back to the company.
Ooh, I completely disagree.
Well, Brian, the great thing is that I love you and I'm okay with you being wrong, but carry on, continue.
Well, Apple, it wasn't the problem with Apple before Steve came back. And I was just reading this in Becoming Steve Jobs, which by the way, is a book that I like more and more as I read it. This is the Brent Schlender and the other guys whose name I can never remember. It's their book.
You know, that's like what you just did. Is like the first season of Gilligan's Island, right? Where they get to the end of the song and they say, and the rest.
Yeah, fair enough. I won't. And the rest. You know, that is so insulting.
I know. And clearly in season two, they were able to add in the professor and Mary Ann. Yep. Do you know how that got added in?
No, do tell.
Okay. So Bob Denver was like the champion for everyone on the show. And he felt that everyone should be treated equally. And so when season two came around and it was time to renegotiate some of the contract things, mm-hmm. he said they needed to fix the theme song because all the characters should be in it. And he threatened to quit the show if they did not redo the theme song.
Wow.
And so they did.
Well, I want to know how it is that the actor playing the professor and the actor playing Marianne, whose name, neither of whose name I can remember, how they were both so, like, how were their agents so bad as to not get them credit?
You know, I think it was a different time. I mean, actors didn't get paid well for those shows.
That's true.
And they certainly didn't make money off of reruns.
Well, they often did for the first, like, two or three or four.
Right, but I mean, like, in a serious way, they weren't making money off of syndication.
Right.
Yeah, I think television actors at that point in the entertainment industry just were little more than animals that they needed to put in front of the camera, at least from the studio's standpoint.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we may have gotten a little off topic. Britt Schlender, Apple, reading that book, and was just recently read this section of that particular book. But I, to me, the problem with Apple wasn't that they were spread too thin; it's that they had too many products that were developed for the wrong reasons. They were developing what Apple was doing before Steve Jobs came back was that they were putting the tiniest tweaks on models that were intended for niche markets, and they were hoping to, by doing so, they were hoping to be able to extend sales by incrementally increasing Mac sales.
And what they did instead was really confuse people.
Yeah, it was incredibly confusing. It was all wrong. But I don't think that the issue was that Apple's management or executives or engineers were spread too thin. It's just the product line was spread too thin. And there's a world of difference between that and the situation that is developing at Apple today, where, you know, you've got Macs and you've got iPhones and you've got iPads, and you've got Apple Watches, and you've got a ton of services. And we've got a car in development. Mm-hmm. You know, and Apple has not really grown all that much. Its executive ranks have not really grown all that much. The board certainly hasn't grown.
I have a feeling that we're on the same side of this argument and just don't realize it.
Maybe.
Because when I'm talking about Apple being spread too thin pre-Steve Jobs' return, I'm talking about the way Apple was handling their product lines, and they made things far too confusing, and they diluted the product value by the nature of what they were doing. And now I see Apple approaching a point where they might be spread too thin, but from a managerial standpoint, not from the actual product line itself. And okay. But then again, the managerial issue is directly from Apple expanding its product lines.
Yeah, that's true.
So we may disagree on part of this, but I have a feeling we're closer than people realize, or we realize.
Well, I mean, I don't know that Apple is spread too thin. I know that there's only one Johnny Ive. And
they've retooled his job so that he can be more productive, more efficient, I'm assuming.
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically.
Yes, but that still means that he's spending less time per product, right? By definition, the more products Apple has, the less time Sir Johnny Ive is spending with them, the less time Phil Schiller is spending with them, the less time Eddie Q is spending with them. Right.
Well, if they have the right people directly controlling each of those projects, in the end, is it going to be that big of a deal that Johnny Ive and Eddie Q and Tim Cook can't put their or aren't putting their fingers directly into the process as much as they otherwise would have been?
Well, I don't know, and that's the question. I didn't actually propose this topic with an agenda. I didn't propose this topic with the idea of raking Apple over the coals and saying that things are going to hell in the handbasket and they're just they're spread too thin. I actually wanted to just explore the topic, and I guess one of the things that has me thinking about this is the recent discussions about Apple Watch that we've had,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not it's missing. My central thesis at this point is that it's missing killer functionality. It's missing that thing we didn't know that we couldn't live without.
Now, okay, and keep in mind, as I toss this out, I'm not tossing this out as an Apple defense, but just as another point for us to pick apart. Is it possible that some of the issues we're seeing, say, like with Apple Watch, are not a problem with Apple internally per se being spread too thin, but with Apple having some bad luck with some of their manufacturing partners.
No. Next. What's right. the next question?
All right. So here's why I was asking that. And keep in mind, I'm still not defending Apple. Is it possible that Apple had to regroup and shift how they were dealing with the development of Apple Watch when they realized that some of the development points were going to be a problem because they couldn't get the pieces, the parts that they needed when they wanted them?
I suppose that is possible, but I will counter that with saying that you can't strike gold every time. Apple has struck gold most times, but like, let's look at the iPad. Do you remember how before the iPad shipped, after it was introduced? Okay, so there was actually speculation. You know, we knew that the iPad was coming more or less,
right,
before it was shown in January. But then Steve showed it in January and said it was coming in April. Right?
Right.
So do you remember during that time between January and April in particular, the end of January and what was it, April 10th? Can't believe I remember that.
I'm amazed.
I know. I can't remember people's names, but
this is why.
Dates and numbers. Dates and numbers and passwords I can remember all day long. It's kind of weird. Anyway, there was a lot of discussion, and in some ways it was angst, about what we would use the iPad for.
Yeah, I remember having discussions about that with you.
Yeah, we talked about it in our writings. We talked about it at user groups. I remember speaking at CatMac. Nancy Gravely, my mom, retired from her presidency of CatMac last night.
That's a big deal. Yeah. Nancy has been the president of Austin's Mac user group for a very long time, and she's been a powerful driving force. She's been, I think, personally responsible for a lot of the success that user group has had.
Yeah, under her leadership, it has completely exploded in popularity, and it's, you know, they've regularly have scores of people showing up at every meeting.
It's one of the most popular, I think, Mac user groups in the United States.
It really is. It really is. And she does get a ton of that credit. They gave her, the board gave her an Apple Watch.
That's really nice.
It really is, actually. I thought it was super nice. And it seems like super fitting, because back in the day when someone, usually a man, let's be honest, because, you know, that's how it was back then. But when a man retired at the end of his career, he would get a gold watch.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I thought it was kind of like particularly appropriate that they gave her an Apple Watch.
I think so. Now, of course, this one probably wasn't gold.
She did not get the Apple Watch edition.
The sentiment is there.
Absolutely. And they gave her an Apple Watch Sport. And it was, I thought it was just super, super awesome of the board to do that and to recognize her years of service in such a way.
I agree. We've both spoken at CatMac in person.
We have. And one of the first time I spoke at CatMac was before the iPad's release. And I remember specifically standing up in front of the CatMac's members and saying that I don't know yet how we're going to use this. But I know that we'll find a way to use it. We'll find a way that it fits into our lives and in ways that we didn't realize we wanted before. And Apple certainly had, the App Store was already in existence when the iPad was announced, and it was already a success.
Yep.
And Apple was putting together the deals that would lead to the iBook Store.
Right.
And Apple was made sure that you know, Safari was going to be this great experience, and of course it knew that people were going to develop games for it, stuff like that. But I don't think that Apple specifically knew how we were going to use this thing either. Just like they didn't know.
No, I'm sure they didn't.
They didn't know that that people were going to clamor so much to run third-party apps on the iPhone.
No, Apple actually resisted that for quite a while. I remember Steve Jobs saying at one point that developers needed to just make web apps, and that's what the iPhone needed.
Right, and then they turned on a dime because you know, Apple's,
because they realized they needed to give us real third-party apps.
Right, and Apple was very good at turning on a dime. Has been very good at turning on a dime under Steve Jobs.
You know, on a side note, I have noticed that Apple gets criticized for that by people that don't understand the company, and they'll use terms like Apple just keeps flip-flopping. They can't make up their mind, and I think they're wrong. I think Apple is very aware of what they're doing, and they have very clear paths that they're following. But when they see that a path needs to be different from what it is, they can make that change very quickly.
Yeah, they take it.
And surprisingly so for a company of their size.
Yes. I completely agree with that. So I don't know if it was so much that they couldn't put everything in the Apple Watch that they wanted. Maybe that's possible. To me,
I forgot we were talking about that. Yes, please continue.
To me, it seems more likely that Apple didn't necessarily know exactly how we were going to use that device either. They knew some things, right? They knew what they were doing with fitness tracking, for instance.
Right.
Right. But you know, that stuff was already pretty tried and true.
Yeah, that's true.
When Apple brought it to market, and you know, so, and it's worked out for Apple in the past, but it doesn't necessarily always work out. And I think that's what we have. I think that's the case with the Apple Watch, to be honest. And is that because, I mean, like, one of the questions is, one of the things that people like to say is that Steve Jobs wouldn't have let that thing be released as is.
Yeah, which
may or may not be the
case. I get why they would say that, but it's irrelevant because he was not involved in this process.
Right. Apple is a different company without him. As much as Apple stays the same company as it was with him, it is not the same company. It cannot be the same company. It won't be the same company. And I'm not saying...
And that's okay. It shouldn't be the same company.
Well, it can't be. It would be great if it could be, actually, because things work so well under Steve. I mean, but the reality is that, you know, Steve, with all his micromanaging and all his refinement and his focus on refinement, I mean, he's not there to do that. He's not there. You know, the iPad was reportedly delayed. It was almost ready to go, and he came back from his first medical leave. Mm-hmm. And he put the skids on. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah, he was not pleased with the project. Actually, I think he took the iPad they put in his hands and threw it in the trash. That's one of the stories that I heard.
I don't remember that particular story, but I certainly like it. Might he have done that with this? I don't know. We don't know. But Steve's eye is no longer on the picture, and we're going to get different products because of that. And you know, so part of the deal is this: Steve's focus was on attracting and retaining A players, the best of the best, mm-hmm. getting rid of the bozos. Why he put so much pressure on people is because it tended to help get rid of the bozos. I'm not necessarily justifying that, but I'm telling you that's why he did it. Mm-hmm. And Steve's executives were the best of the best. Almost all of those executives are still there. Scott Forstall being the big exception, Ron Johnson being another exception. Mm-hmm. One was fired, the other quit to go do his own thing. And there are only so many best of the best executives to go around. There are only so many best of the best engineers to go around. Like, we know, for instance, that the part of the car team came from the iPhone. And the iPhone team originally came from the OS X team, the Mac team.
And Apple has a history of taking those engineers and just moving them around from project to project.
Right. And
so this isn't new.
But as Apple has gotten huger, and it is truly a huge company in terms of revenue.
I'm sorry. I think the term is more bigger.
More bigger. Thank you. More bigger. And more bigger still on a daily basis. As Apple has, I mean, you know, there are only so many A players to go around.
That's true. You know, on the, would Steve Jobs have let the Apple Watch out the door mm-hmm. as it is? Mm-hmm. I think the answer is yes. And I think that if the original iPhone was released today, people would say Steve Jobs would not have let this out the door like this.
Yeah, it's possible. Look at this thing. Boy, howdy, no. I look at it. It's,
I mean, it was so limited. We had a notes app that would just take whatever you typed into it and make it disappear. You could not copy, paste, or cut in a document.
Didn't sync?
I mean,
you could sync it with iTunes, but you know, you weren't like, couldn't sync those notes, for instance.
Right. Yeah. And I remember asking, well, how do I get this content back to my Mac where I need it?
All that said, though, the thing about iPhone was that it was the internet in our pocket, and it did that. That was the killer app. That was the killer functionality of the iPhone. It was the internet in your pocket. The App Store that made it such an astounding success, a biggest of all the biggies.
Mm-hmm.
The App Store was the icing on the cake. The cake itself was the internet in our pocket, and it did that, and it did that better than any device that had ever come before. People wanted the iPhone to do more. They weren't cranky about what the iPhone did. And they weren't cranky that the iPhone didn't do more. But like, we weren't cranky about the lack of copy and paste. We all noted it.
Oh, I was. Almost.
You weren't cranky about it, man. You were not cranky about it. You weren't going, this thing is ridiculous because it can't copy and paste. It was like, it would be nice if we could do that.
No, I think it was more like, it's stupid that it can't.
That's not how I recall it, sir.
Well, that's all right. Maybe your image of how I was at that point has been tinted with rose-colored glasses, and I'm okay with that.
Maybe you were being polite.
Maybe I was being polite. Actually, I probably was being polite, and in private, I wailed and gnashed teeth.
That's okay. Fair enough. But by and large, I don't think that most users were complaining about what the iPhone did. They just wanted it to do more.
Well,
and
I think
they saw
looking
the promise
back,
that it had.
Yeah. And I think looking back, people will be saying the same thing about Apple Watch. But right now, people are complaining, and the complaining's louder. I think part of that is because we don't know what that magic pain point is that it's going to really address. If we have ideas.
We're talking about the Apple Watch
again. Yes.
Yeah, because it's not solving a magic pain point. All the things that the Apple Watch does well, and there are many things that it does really, really well, they're not things that make people go, how did I live without this before? They're just not. And that's the thing that it's missing. And the question is whether or not it would have been missing that, because, you know, to sort of actually contradict everything I said, but not everything I was actually necessarily thinking, Steve made plenty of mistakes too. Steve let things get out the door that shouldn't have gotten out the door.
Yep. How about the iPod Hi-Fi?
I hated that thing, man.
Oh, man.
It was not a good piece. Or you know, .Mac, iTools. You know, all these things were riddled with
hockey puck mouse.
Oh, good Lord, that was a piece of garbage. The keyboard that came with the original iMac, piece of garbage.
It was an embarrassment.
Yeah, it really, really was. And, you know, anyway, the point is that Steve was far from perfect, and he made plenty of his own mistakes. And we don't know what kind of influence he would have had on Apple Watch. But I do think that Apple Watch is missing killer functionality. And the question that's relevant to this conversation is that because Apple is spread too thin, or is it just because it couldn't happen? It hadn't happened yet.
I think right now it's more towards because it couldn't happen yet. I think Apple saw a market that they needed to disrupt, but instead of being able to drop the big bomb on the market like they were able to do with the iPhone, mm-hmm. this is more of a ground assault where they have to move in slowly, and then as they advance, then the killer function for Apple Watch becomes clearer.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that my opinion is that Apple is not spread too thin, but the question is how much bigger can Apple get before it becomes spread too thin? We could be nearing that point.
I think if Apple doesn't make some changes administratively before the Apple Car comes out, then they will be at a point where they are spread too thin.
Well, you know, there are other new products out there that we have not heard a single rumor about. Now, I say that with some inside knowledge, not inside knowledge of the products themselves, but
just that they're happening.
That they're happening. Yeah, stuff that has not seen even a glimmer of a rumor, a glimmer of a leak, you know, because it's all internal stuff. It has nothing that's gone off to China and Taiwan to be assembled and stuff like that. So, I mean, it may not be just the Apple Car. You know, it could be before that. Apple Car is supposed to be released. Apple Car has been theorized to be a product intended for, like, that 2020 time frame.
Right.
Or is that right? 2018, 2020, thereabouts?
Yeah, about 2020.
And I would imagine that we will see other new products before, new product lines, new markets entered before the car comes out.
Well, depending on what those products and product markets are, Apple may be okay. But I think once they hit the car itself, because that is such a dramatically different market for the company, mm-hmm. that's the point. That will be the tipping point for being strictly.
But the phone market was a dramatically different.
Well, yes and no. It was dramatically different in that Apple had never made phones before. But it was also the same in that it was a computer market, and they miniaturized their computers.
Okay, but my counter to that is that the car is a computer market too, especially with an electric car. It's all about the computing and the software.
Yes, but it's also a very mechanical market. And the iPhone was never a mechanical device.
The Mac was never a radio device.
No, but Apple was already making airport base stations. So they were already in the radio market.
Not the same radio market.
No, not the same radio market, but they were in a radio market. Apple has never made a mechanical product. Even when they had printers, Canon made those. Apple did not make printers, so they were not in the mechanical market.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much of a... I think that the stretch from everything Apple does today to a car, to an electric car, is very, very similar to the stretch from computers to smartphones.
I think it's a bigger stretch than you're realizing right now.
Okay, that's all right. You're entitled to be wrong.
and so are you.
All right, we're out of time, man.
We are?
Yeah, believe it or not. We got through a whole show.
It was the Gilligan's Island talk that pushed us all the way
thank
up to
goodness
here.
Thank goodness we had that one. And the rest.
Here on Apple Context Machine.
Yeah, like Brian Chaffin. And the rest. I mean, what kind of a jerk would I be?
I know. I'd be in talking to the producers.
Those guys are jerks.
I know. But if I take them a bottle of whiskey, mm-hmm. they're far more receptive.
Mm-hmm.
At least so far. Anyhow, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
See, our content is written by... I gotta scroll up here.
The good people
at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Hey, I've only done this, what is it, 300 and... Well, I guess I've only done it 280 times.
So you've got an excuse.
Yeah, I'll have it memorized any day now. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Boom just recorded for us. Recorded just for whatever, man. That's it. We're done this week.
And stay subscribed so you can hear how we butcher our outro next week.
We hope to see you online at the Mac Observer after this performance.